Namaste, friends. Welcome to Gyan Ganga, Words of Wisdom on our Virat Hindustan social media channels. It is the eve of our 75 years of independence, and it is wishing all our viewers and Indians across the globe a very happy Independence Day. And as we have achieved in the last 75 years, we are going to discuss a topic today: India at 75, what we have achieved so far and what can we achieve at 100. And no better expert than Dr. Subramaniam Swamy to discuss this important topic. And I have to thank my co-host, Professor Arvind Chaturvedi from Delhi, and Sri Ramesh Swamy. Incidentally, it is Ramesh Swamy's birthday, so it is best wishes on behalf of the VHS team and all our viewers across the globe, and wishing him a very happy birthday. And we thank you for our patronage. Last Sunday, we had episode number 166, when the topic was whether war with China is inevitable. And we had our special guest, besides Dr. Swamy, we had Miss Cleo Parkskull, and the viewership was 1,12,053 viewers on various social media channels. Because as you know, we are not only on YouTube, we are on very other platforms like Facebook, Instagram, Spaces, Periscope, and various other podcast channels. So the viewership has been quite good, and we thank our viewers across the globe for your patronage. So without much words, I have to thank our technical team led by Ashish Shetty from Mumbai, Tejas Navalgul from Pune, Ishwar Iyer from Navi Mumbai, Swaminathan from Chennai, Rakesh Gadgi from Karnataka, Vishal Mehta from Mumbai, and Ajesh Nair from Kerala for their background support to put all this program together. So with these words, it's over to Dr. Swamy to tell us India at 75, what we have achieved so far and what can we achieve at 100. So over to Dr. Swamy. Thank you. Dhanyavad.
Thank you very much, Jagdish and the team here. This is a vast topic. I could write a book perhaps on it. I've tried to highlight the points which need to be remembered forever. India has demonstrated so many things which we in our common conversation, we do not ever bring it in, you know, as part. We are a bit critical about what things are happening. Of course, we have to criticize that. But there are things which we have achieved which is tremendous. We have had, of course, flops also, like the 1962 China war. But all in all, India has proved itself to be a great, amazing country. First of all, I begin, before I go into the 75 years and what to do in the remaining 25 years, let me say, we have remained as a democracy. And this democracy is not British democracy. It's got a constitution, and it's got states, unlike Britain. We don't have a queen. We have borrowed some things from the British parliamentary system. I mean, the parliament functioning. But on the other hand, we got Supreme Court, and we have got states, and we got state high courts, and so many things which have nothing to do with Britain. Perhaps closer to America in that respect. But it has survived. And why it's surviving is so important for me is that it was predicted from day one that we will not be a democracy. It was predicted that we will not even be one country. Churchill had predicted in 1947-48 that India will break up into 400 countries, which was the number of rajas who merged with India. And later on, Richard Nixon said, we'll break up into 20 countries. It's not a natural country. Then all this bogus history, Aryan, Dravidian, this and that, which, you know, further was sought to create this atmosphere. But Indians overcame it. Then you go to the emergency. Emergency was defeated by the poorest sections of India relatively. The South voted for Indira Gandhi. If the North also had voted for Indira Gandhi, then we would have emergency continued today. We would not be a democracy. But what we found is that in every constituency of UP, Bihar, Madhya Pradesh, Rajasthan, Haryana, all these Hindi-speaking states, which are relatively to the South very poor and less educated also, and there they completely wiped out the Congress. Janata Party would not have got majority, but for the fact that the North voted 100% for the Janata Party. Because almost 100% in the South, the four states of the South, voted for Indira Gandhi's party and its allies. So therefore, I want to say, this is a great achievement. Everybody had predicted that India will never be a democracy again. This is the world, the way the third world is going. When I was campaigning in America, people said, we agree with everything you say. But now democracy is not going to come back. Why don't you just settle down and start teaching again in Harvard? And at that stage, Harvard, in fact, had given me a position so that I could get some benefits without having to ask anybody for handouts. So therefore, you just see in these respective ways. In 62, yes, we lost to China. But remember, there was a battle which we have not publicized for silly reasons. And I'll tell you what the silly reasons are. In Nathula Pass, in 1967, our army was suddenly confronted with the Chinese coming down the hill. And they took on those narrow roads of the hills where you can fall, you know, down to your death. They took tanks and defeated the Chinese. And the Chinese ran away. And we have not reported it at all. I happened to see it when I became minister in 1990. Those papers, there was no defense minister. So very often the prime minister used to send things to me, which were connected with defense ministry for an opinion. And in that, I found this mention. Same thing in 1987, Sumdurung Chu. In there, the Chinese were again given a beating and they had to run. We haven't publicized it. Of course, we have defeated Pakistan four times. We made Pakistan into two, Bangladesh and West Pakistan. We can make today West Pakistan into four, Baluchistan, Sindh, or Pakhtunistan as independent countries, and only Punjab, Western Punjab left as to hold the Pakistani flag. All these capacities we have, and with all the other so-called divisions and all this bogus history of Aryan, Dravidian, the rigidity, the birth-based caste system. And Krishna says so clearly in Gita that it's, it's based on gunas. It's not based on on birth. And there's nothing wrong with being born in a Brahmin family and becoming a Brahmin. But you must have those gunas. Each of the four castes, varnas, were based on gunas. And they have people like Vishwamitra born in a Kshatriya family and becoming a Maharishi. Vedavyasa's mother was a fisherwoman, but he was a Maharishi. So these are things which we need now to start bringing back, because the British created this history books and so on. I'm sorry to say our government has still not been able to manage it. I was told that now they may get a draft very soon. The NCERT, I recently had gone to address a meeting for NCERT on Sardar Panikkar's remembrance. And in that, the NCERT had sponsored my lecture. They told me there that, yes, we are now in a position where we will be able to give a draft history. But how long will that take? I don't know. But anyway, we need now to understand that no crisis has managed to break India up. There was one attempt of the Tamils to talk in that language. We just dismissed the government when Chandrasekhar was prime minister. I was personally responsible when they wanted to go with the LTT and break away from India. We dismissed the government. Nothing. People supported us. And that was the end of that. And when the elections were taken, out of 234 seats of the assembly, the DMK got only 2 seats. Only 2 seats. Which they hide in their shame. So, India is a country which is a one country, one people, one DNA, according to microbiological laboratories. We are one, and even in the University of Cambridge Journal of Genetics says we are one country. Houston University says the same thing. Mysore University says the same thing. But still, it's not. It is Aryan, Dravidian, North, South. All this nonsense is there. All our languages are connected by Sanskrit words. And but we don't recognize it. Karunanidhi himself, his name was Sanskrit. He used to say election symbol, chin is Sanskrit, chinnam in Tamil. Udayan, Suryan is their symbol. That's all Sanskrit. So Devanagari and Tamil script are very close to each other. So this, we should have in these last 75 years gone in for that. But Jawaharlal Nehru set the tone that it's by which these divisions continued. So I'll start by saying we are a country which was invaded, brutally invaded. They even occupied some parts of India. We defeated them. The Mughals were defeated in 1815 by the Marathas. Peshwas were at that time ruling. Shivaji was no more. We defeated the Mughals completely. Aurangzeb had gone to the southern Aurangabad, what is now still called Aurangabad. And there he set up an army to win the south. And the Marathas, under the leadership of the Peshwas, they defeated them. Of course, by then, everybody had become so weak. So that when the British came in 1815, they began slowly to take control. In 1857, after the failure of the rebellion, that was, I would call it, the first war of independence, as Savarkar had said and written a lovely book on it, which is worth reading. And so, but we never stopped. Therefore, after 1857 and the crushing of by the British, still all the sadhus and sannyasis got up. Aurobindo came. Ramakrishna, so many people had come up in all parts of India. Even poets like Subramanian, who's was a great poet. He gave up poetry. But through poetry, he started making people stand up. So this is something our younger generation know. India is one country. Nobody can break us. If they try to break us, then you will see the same reaction we saw in 1962 when the Chinese came down the hills and looked like Jawaharlal Nehru had collapsed and he said farewell to Assam in tears on the radio. But the people stood up, public meetings were held, people gave their gold, the women gave their jewelry and put them in buckets, saying, use it for buying weapons. So the integrity of India is an achievement which all of us should recognize as what we have achieved. Democracy is another. Emergency is a clear indication that people want democracy, even if they are poor, they want democracy. only the anglicized people, think that Indians don't want democracy because they don't know what the people of India are thinking. So let's count these, and they may need to count, but, I've got a big subject, so I'll have to move on. Now we are discovering things which is being created just now in this program, where people used to make fun of us. For example, yoga. I know when I was a school student, people used to make fun of yoga. What is this contortion and all that? Today, yoga is all over. If you go to the United States, every town has a yoga shop. And yoga, meditation, so many things, you see, which we used to think is obscurantism and something we should... It's all there. We are the only country which has so many religions, but we have in the constitution set that all religions will have equal rights. We haven't made any kind of distinction. Even those countries where our Hindus are being discriminated against, even those countries' religion, in our country where their religion originated, we have taken them as ours. There's a lot of attempt to break us up. People coming from abroad, creating problems. Some people here misguided too. They become fodder for them. So, as we decide what needs to be done for India, which is what I'll come to now, that 75 years we have been through crisis, come out of agriculture. There was a time in 1965 when everybody thought that this country is going to through famine. Two officers of the State Department of the United States called Paddock and Paddock. You can still get that book if you go to it. It's called World Famine 1975. He wrote the book in 1965. Then in 10 years, and with the chapter on India, he says, Indians will eat themselves because the world cannot feed them. All the grain of the United States cannot feed America. So like in a war, we select those prisoners who can be rescued and then put in a hospital and recovered. Not those who have been on the way to dying, and they would probably die by the time we take them to the station. So he classified countries that way. Countries which can be rescued, countries which can, these two officers, countries which cannot be rescued in the coming famine of 1975. And India was the one where they said there'll be a famine where people will eat each other on the streets. All these are things, Paddock and Paddock's book on world famine, please read that and be shocked. I mean, there have been books like that even during the British period. But what happened then? Lal Bahadur Shastri, he was no great scholar or Cambridge educated or whatever. He didn't come from any special family. With his common sense, he had the humility, which I think Mr. Narendra Modi should learn, saying that I don't know the subject, but I will call the best people in the country. So you got C. Subramaniam, you got Swaminathan from Agricultural Research Institute. He even got one or two Americans and Filipinos who have been doing research on grain. And this grain, green revolution today, which enables us to have this huge, silos full of grain. We never have a grain problem in our country. We are exporting food. All this happened within 10 years. When they said in 10 years we'll be eating each other, we were exporting rice and wheat and so on. Because between 1967, immediately, with just 10% of our farmers being given water, electricity, pesticides, fertilizers and so on, they tripled and quadrupled the yield per acre. And now, if you can imagine, if the all of India, all the farmers are equally liberated, then the way those 10% were, then I'll tell you, we won't know where to put the grain and there'll be a glut. So this was a country which was one time was so prosperous that people all over the world came. In Boston, in Cambridge, Massachusetts, there's a lake called, it is a area of that local place. That lake freezes in the winter completely. And there was a signboard there. Here stood the company which was producing ice. And it added one more line. It exported rice to India. 1636, from Massachusetts to India, both Bengal and Tamil Nadu, ships came and put ice, which had been put in sawdust so that it won't melt. So all this, I mean, that was the position. People came to India to buy this, buy that, and so on. They didn't have anything. So ultimately, they tried to sell ice, which India could not get in Bengal and in South India. So the greatness of India all through history is there. Go to Cambodia, go to Vietnam, go to Indonesia. You know that the Indonesians have their 20,000 rupee currency note, Ganesha in it, even though it's a Muslim country. We don't know. Ask any Indian whether he knows this. They won't even believe it if you tell him. So I start with this positive note and then say to you that today, if we are having economic problems, it is not because India is lacking in talent. It's not because we are lacking in resources. It is because we are following the wrong economics. And this is not something I am now saying on this show. I've been saying from 2016. If you see the graph of the GDP growth from 2016 down, 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 down till the last quarter before Corona. Today, if I say something, everybody in Twitter tell me, oh, this is all because of Corona. Why don't you keep that in mind? Here is another. Look at what's happening today. The deficit in foreign exchange, that is all these lines, and the last since 2021 is all going down. Then this line is what is called as the exchange rate between the rupee and dollar. And that is that red color, and it's been going down and down, and this is also out of date because now it's crossed 80. So then the Comptroller of Auditor General have raised concerns over central government debt. Several indicators gauging the sustainability of debt have turned out to be unfavorable since 2016. This has got nothing to do with the Corona. Since that time, we have been squandering our money and getting into debt. And the debt has gone to such an extent that today, of course, because of other reasons, our foreign exchange has come down. You know, stock, which was heading towards 1 trillion, is now down to 400 billion. And 400 billion Americans, we owe the Americans 500 billion in loans. If the Americans say, give it to us all together, which is due to them, what will happen? Then you see bad loans. Unbelievable. 2017, 1.61,000 crores. Then higher, higher, higher. And all put together. And of course, 2021, we haven't come down. Actually, our industrial development has gone down, and therefore, where the loans are being taken less, and then, and as a consequence, you it shows up from 2021 onwards. Last 5 years, anyway, 9.9 crores, lakh crores is how much bad loans written off. Now, this is what the banking minister told them in parliament. You can go up and see more of the same thing. You have foreigners are now started to quit. Indians are also going abroad. Now, we can't hide this. Today, if I were to say, after 75 years, what is the saddest part of India today is the complete mismanagement of the economy. And it's got nothing to do with India lacking this or lacking that. It's just bad policy. And that bad policy is because they didn't understand that in the first thing you do in economics is you see whether it's a demand problem or a supply problem. In India, it's a demand problem. Why? Because people are either out of work, or their salaries have been cut, or the prices have gone so high, or the income taxes have gone up so high. So cure that. Our interest rates are now 12%, 13% for getting a loan. In America, you get loans for 2%. And we can easily have 8, 9% or 7%. I'm talking about the prime lending rate. I'm not talking about any specific particular loan with special conditions which the interest rates can be reduced. So this is, if today in the 75th year, the first thing I would say is that our economy is going down and it can crash. It'll be sudden. And then there will be great misery in the country. The Prime Minister needs to do it. I'm not saying that he should ask me. I mean, there may be many reasons he doesn't want to ask me. I have not even asked him to ask me, you see. I've not gone to him because why should I? When people needed me, they called me. Chandrasekhar needed me. Then I came and saved it. VP Singh had made a complete mess. And I took some steps by which we at least temporarily stopped the problem of being declared as a bankrupt country. Then Narasimha Rao came and he told me also that you please come and join me. But he said, condition is that you have to join Congress Party. I said, that I will not do. So then he said, okay, I'll make you a chairman of a very important commission with cabinet rank and you can attend cabinet and you will, of course, meet me. So every day at 5 o'clock, I was to meet him, not only for economics, but even for Ram Janmabhoomi and so on. In fact, I've circulated in Twitter a long time ago, I think 5-6 years ago, a letter Narasimha Rao is thanking me for all the contribution I made in the Ram Mandir matter. And so that is the way we went about it, solving problems. Today, the problem can be solved. The economy can be turned around in my opinion, 6 months. And you can grow on a path of 10% per year, which is what you have to do. So when I talk about where we'll be on the 100th year after 1947, of course, we have been thousands and thousands of years. This 1947 is something artificial that somebody came and went. The Mughals came and then they had to leave in 1815. They were thrashed by the Marathas and so they had to leave. Do you ever heard of a son and daughter, grandson or daughter, of Aurangzeb? All our Rajas, if you want Shivaji's descendants, you can go to Aurangabad or to Pune and you will see them. So all these people's family are there. But after Aurangzeb, there's nobody. How can I, such a big empire which ruled for so many years, 150 years or so, not have successors? I mean, family successors, because that was the fact that they were not really speaking grown out of our soil. They came as invaders, they looted, they took over, lived here, and became Indians. But in terms of its total personality, they were not in that sense connected with the mud of India. So I'm saying today that we have today to see how to move forward. you want to grow fast. How fast? 10%. How do you grow at 10%? At the macroeconomic level, if your rate of investment, that is all the money you have saved and put into investment, as a ratio of GDP, is 36%, for example, India was, till this all this came, Corona, this thing, that thing, and then right from 2016, our rate of saving and investment has been falling. But we can make it, and during the UPA period, it was 36%, but there was so much corruption, so much waste. So we didn't get the benefit of it. If we use this money of 36% efficiently, which means the capital output ratio becomes smaller and smaller. What is capital output ratio? The amount of capital you need to generate 1 rupee of product. You invest so much money, you get 1 rupee every year. So that is, and if that is small, then it's good, which means that you're having less capital, you're using it efficiently. If you have a very big capital output ratio, that means you're wasting your investments and your savings are being frittered. So it's a measure of efficiency. So the rate of investment, 36%. And if your capital output ratio is only 3, then the mathematics says the growth rate of the country will be the rate of investment divided by capital output ratio. That means 36 divided by 3, that means 12%. So with what we are saving today, the Indian people save a lot. People don't understand. I mean, household saving is nowhere in the world so high as in India. About 85% of our total savings come from households in our country. In America, it's a minus 2% because in America, nobody saves. Everything is taken in loan from banks and then they pay installments. India is the only place where people save for a variety of reasons, but they save. And especially the Indian women, they are very saving conscious, you see. So 36%, we have been having that, but wasting it. Today, if we go today, because of all these other things, it has come down to 30%. So we must bring it back, make it easy. How do you make it easy? You make it profitable for people to save. But if you go on putting taxes on them, more and more complicated taxes, GST, this thing, people get fed up. And they'll go into black money. Black money will always go to consumption. It'll never go for investment. So what I'm saying is inspire the people to save and invest. And the way to do it is lower the interest rate, which is today 9%, lower it to 6%. Then raise the fixed deposit rate from the present 7% to about 10%. You will find people will come and pour money into these accounts. So you'll get plenty of money and you invest it. Invest it in what? Invest it in where the demand is there, not with the supply. It's no use starting another car factory because there's a surplus of cars in our country. In the money, in the purchasing power people have. So if you follow this, if 36% of investment is efficiently used, for which the measure is capital output ratio is 3. In Japan, they used to have 1.5 at one stage. India has been running at 6 and 7. What a waste. 6 rupees of capital for generating 1 rupee. If you use efficiently, abolish income tax because it's a harassment. Only who pays income tax? Agriculture, 0. Agriculture, there's no income tax. Poor people, no, because they are below the line. And those above, the rich, they have chartered accountants. So exemption, that exemption, so on. They pay very little. It's this middle class, salaried class whose incomes are cut at the source. who are paying most of the time. So make it worthwhile for them. Incentivize, don't force them. And then you go into a growth rate of 10% per year. India also has another major, and that's my last point. India has another major duty. We have to tell the whole world on our own strength. You see, this is what innovation, technology, capital and labor go in. Innovation is very important because you get new and new things. And then, of course, the infrastructure, and that gives you growth, with growth rate, which is by the formula I told you, reduction in poverty, with another one of our goals by these choices for structural change, productivity. So these are some of the things which this lack of time, I can't go too deeply into it. But I would say, if today Indian economy has to change a turnaround, they may say anything 6%, 8%. If you see one day, IMF will say India is growing at 8% in the next 6 months. At the end of 6 months, they say, no, India has only grown at 4%. People at the time of 6%, everybody celebrating. And they even send me, they send me tweets saying, oh, now 8%, what do you have to say? But then when you look back, it's only 4%. It was only 3% in the first 4 months of 2020, just before the corona. And then it fell down 18%. We have still not come back and recovered those 18%. But what's the use? I mean, then they say, oh, you're all the time critical. You're all the time criticizing and so on. I am fed up. I mean, I don't want to talk about economics very much, but I'll say, we have a major problem on which I've already spoken previously, the Chinese presence in India. They can ruin all your economic development by attacking us and we not being prepared. And therefore, I feel that in the next few 2-3 years, we are going to have this problem of foreign invasion by the Chinese. And we should prepare for that. Make the right kind of enemies. Fighting China will be they'll be just the right enemies, because the Western world will be totally with you. We don't want anything from the Western world in terms of troops. We just want their weapons. If the Americans alone give us the weapons we want, we can finish off the Chinese. They have the terrain is in our favor, and that will give us international status. So economic growth. So conclusion is, economic growth of 10% per year for at least 10 years, and defeating the Chinese in Ladakh and in Arunachal with the help of all these modern weapons, which we can do and we must do, India will become a global power when we reach the 100th age, and we'll be challenging not China, because then by then China will collapse, because they are in a big problem, because the Americans have pulled out. All the economic growth was because of Americans setting up factories in America to take semi-processed goods from East Asia, add value, and then sell it in America, and China got the intermediate value. Now that's all dried up. The Americans are also, scaled down. So once you defeat the Chinese, once you've grown at 10% per year for 10 years, which is possible, Narasimha Rao proved you can grow at 8%. So 10% is nothing. 10% growth rate would require 36% of investment, and instead of 3, let's be inefficient, 3.5. 3.5 will mean 10%. So 36 divided by 3.5 will be 10%. So if you grow 10% per year for 10 years and build weapons by making the right kind of alliances and defeat China, because they have come into your territory. I am a great votary of supporting friendship with China. But if you come into my territory, then you're no friend. Till you new leadership comes in China, I don't want to be friends with them. But in the meantime, these guys must be evicted. Can't go on making adjustments. And so these two will make us a global power in to challenge the United States after 2047. And because of our manpower, our brains, our abilities, we'll defeat America anytime after that. So that's the scenario that I see for our great country. Our current country was the most developed country in the world, and it must become the most developed country once again. Thank you very much, and sorry for taking so much time, Jagdish.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Swami. One of our question is, what will be our what should be our education policy, and what do you see happening 25 years from now and on the education front? One of our viewers has asked the question, Dr. Swami.
Education are two parts. One is, of course, your skills. We are doing okay because our people, they go abroad and show their skills very easily. And we can make it more easy, you can make it more electronics, you can, make it more accessible, available, scholarships, poor people. Because in India, everybody has brains. There's nobody, no such thing as one group or one caste or one varna or none of that. It has been demonstrated now. All Indians have the same brains. They have to just get the opportunity. But the problem comes in the mindset. If you are risk averse, you can't grow in society. You must be a person who must be taught to take risks scientifically. Assess it and take the decision. Just avoiding, everybody wants to be a bureaucrat. They want a steady salary. They want, after the age of 60, to get pensions. And, this craze for, stable life. No, they should be taught to be taking risks, do things, build desalination of seawater. You will have no problem with water. Convert thorium into a reactor compliant nuclear fuel. You can finance the whole world in terms of producing nuclear energy. So, India is abundant with resources. So we have to motivate people to take risks and do things for the country. That's about one factor. And the other is, of course, you must know your true history. You can't be thinking that you are a slave and the British put you together or the Mughals kept beating you. Where did the Americans and Mughals beat us? Finally, we beat them. We were not ready for their kind of brutal war. That was all in our system of war. If you go to Mahabharata and Ramayana, the forces used to come to a maidan in the morning as the sun rose, and they then went back to their tents when the sun came down. You know that there's a case of Karna or the Drona where Krishna deliberately brought the put his chakra in front of the sun so that the sun, the darkness comes, and so everybody has to then say Yudhivaram and go. So we had these cultural things, and get rid of this caste, this varna and all that. There's all nonsense. There's no such thing as a born Brahmin. I am totally against that. Yes, there are good. There is, if you devote yourself to education, you live a simple life and you teach students and so on, then you automatically qualify for Brahmin. It's not where you are born. Yes, for Jati, we used to have a blood thing because we didn't want brothers and sisters to marry, for example. So Jati was a way of ensuring that children born are not become unable to be proper human beings, say, because the blood groups were not true. So I'm not talking about Jati at all. I'm talking about Varna, and Varna is to be abolish this. So these are the things I would say need to be done.
Arvind, before I have my question, can you want to ask a question? There is a lot of request, Dr. Swami, from the viewers to say something also in Hindi for the benefit of the viewers. I don't know whether you can do a...
I don't mind saying, but if you can make it a time factor.
Arvind, I mean,
such a big subject.
Dr. Swami, main Hindi mein bolta hun, so hamare kuch jo Hindi ke bhasha ke sunne wale hain unko bhi kuch samajh mein achhi tarah aayega. डॉक्टर स्वामी, आपने जो अभी तक वर्णन किया हमारी 75 वर्षों की जो यात्रा रही 1947 से 1922 तक, किन किन क्षेत्रों में भारत ने प्रगति की और महान प्रगति की, कौन कौन से क्षेत्र जो ऐसे थे जो टर्निंग पॉइंट थे हमारी हिस्ट्री में, आपने ग्रीन रिवॉल्यूशन का जिक्र किया स्वामीनाथन जी का, और फूड ग्रेन के जो प्रोडक्शन है उसके उत्पादन का जिक्र किया, तो और खास तौर से नरसिम्हा राव जी का जो आर्थिक सुधार रहा जिसको हम एलपीजी कहते हैं, लिबरलाइजेशन, प्राइवेटाइजेशन और ग्लोबलाइजेशन, और उसी की वजह से 1990 से अभी तक जो यात्रा रही उसमें भारत ने बहुत योगदान दिया. आपने अगले 25 वर्षों के लिए भारत को एक रास्ता दिखाया कि भारत का रास्ता जब हमारे पास निवेश करने के लिए 36 से 40% तक है और सिर्फ हमें अपना इंक्रीमेंटल कैपिटल आउटपुट रेशियो जो है उसमें सुधार करना है, यदि हम सुधार करके उसको 4 से 3 पे ले आए तो हमारा ग्रोथ 12% तक हो सकता है. डॉक्टर स्वामी, 12% अगर ग्रोथ होगा तो बहुत ही जल्दी आर्थिक दृष्टि से भारत विश्व का गुरु निश्चित ही बन जाएगा, और मुश्किल से 5 वर्ष लगेंगे हमें किसी भी बड़े देश की मुकाबला करने में, और जरूर हम अभी पीपीपी टर्म्स में नंबर 3 पे हैं. हो सकता है यदि हमारी 12% की ग्रोथ रेट हमें मिल जाए तो बहुत जल्दी हम दो बड़ी शक्तियों को, आर्थिक शक्तियों को भी पछाड़ सकते हैं. मैं आपसे सिर्फ एक सवाल पूछना चाहता हूं कि जो नरसिम्हा राव जी ने आर्थिक सुधार किया था जिसकी बदौलत इतनी आर्थिक प्रगति हुई, कौन सा ऐसा रोड़ा बीच में आया या कौन सा ऐसा बिंदु आया जहां से ये पलट गया और हम रुक गए, हम आगे नहीं बढ़ पाए?
जो नरसिम्हा राव ने किया वो उसकी जो यानी जो पेट्रोल थी वो खत्म हो गई है, अब नया पेट्रोल डालना है. अब क्या करना है, नए नए इनोवेशन को नए नए यंत्रों को पैदा करनी है. हमारे देश में पानी मिलता नहीं है, लोग लंबे लंबे क्यों आज भी कई गांवों में खड़े. आप ऐसा करो कि जो समुंदर है बे ऑफ बंगाल उसका पानी को आप पीने के पानी लायक बना दो. इसको इज़राइल कर रहे हैं, इज़राइल के पास तो कोई नदी ही नहीं है, सब रेगिस्तान है, लेकिन अब हरियाली है क्योंकि समुंदर से वो निकाल के जो नमक है उसको हटा के पीने के पानी उत्पन्न करते हैं. फिर बिजली सबके लिए सस्ता कर दो, कि मैं तो कहता हूँ मुफ्त ही कर दो. बिजली के लिए क्या करना चाहिए, जो थोरियम है उसको रिएक्टर में डालकर बिजली पैदा करनी चाहिए. हमने रोक कर रखा क्योंकि अमेरिका के साथ हमने उस समझौता किया ना, वो न्यूक्लियर डील अमेरिका के साथ, उसके बाद वो सारा न्यूक्लियर जो होमी भाभा ने जिसके जो उसकी सपना थी कि एक दिन हम अपनी जो सामग्री है बाहर से हम यूरेनियम नहीं लाएंगे, हमारी देश की जो थोरियम है उसी के उपयोग करें, उसमें आपको करना चाहिए. सारे जो नदियां हैं उसको कनाल से जोड़ दीजिए. गोदावरी के 90% पानी जा रही है समुद्र में, कृष्णा का भी 75% जा रही है, और यहाँ तमिलनाडु में हम कावेरी के लिए झगड़ा करते रहते हैं हर साल. यानी मैं तो कहता हूँ कि समुद्र से पानी निकाल करके भर दो इसमें कावेरी में और उल्टा भेज दो तमिलनाडु से कर्नाटक. तो कई मैं ये कहता हूँ, क्या आप जब सवाल पूछते मैं कहता हूँ देखिए, नवीन यंत्रों को जिसको इनोवेशन कहते हैं अंग्रेजी में, उसको लाकर ही हम जाए. अमेरिका उसी से आगे बढ़ी, पहले उन्होंने वायरलेस ढूंढा, फिर टेलीफोन पैदा किया, फिर हवाई जहाज शुरू की, फिर जेट इंजन्स की, फिर उन्होंने फैक्स मशीन्स लाए, उसके बाद कंप्यूटर लाए, तो कुछ ना कुछ नया करते रहते हैं और जो भी वहाँ करता है उसका बड़ी पुरस्कार देते हैं, उसकी बड़ी यानी प्रसिद्धि बनाते हैं उसकी। तो वैसे एक चरित्र हमें पैदा करनी होगी हमारे देश में। हमारे इंडियंस तो बहुत अच्छा काम अमेरिका में कर रहे हैं, तो यहाँ क्यों नहीं कर सकते? मैं हार्वर्ड में प्रोफेसर था, इंडिया में आकर मेरा हाल क्या किया आप जानते हैं? तो मुझे दिल्ली यूनिवर्सिटी से निकाल दी, फिर IIT से भी निकाल दी, फिर किसी यूनिवर्सिटी में तुम्हें नौकरी नहीं मिलेगी। इंदिरा गांधी ने मैसेज मुझे भेजा मेरे पिताजी के जरिए, जिनको जानते थे वो। तो अब मुझे छोड़ के फिर राजनीति में आना पड़ा। बीच में मैं जाकर हार्वर्ड में पढ़ाता था, बस इतना था। बट मैं ये कहता हूँ कि हमारी देश में ये ईर्ष्या जो है, ये तो हमारे ऊपर से ऊपर जो भी है उनके में भी ईर्ष्या बहुत है, हमने देखा है। ये सब हमारी देश की जो योग्यता है इसमें, इसको इसको सीमित करने में, ये जो ये चरित्र में परिवर्तन आने के लिए हमारी शिक्षा जगत में है। बाकी सारी चीज चल रहे हैं, सिर्फ ठीक से पैसा देना चाहिए और थोड़ा आधुनिक करना चाहिए, कंप्यूटर सबके लिए स्कूल में अवेलेबल होना चाहिए, इस प्रकार से हम कर सकते हैं। और मैं ये कहता हूँ कि आज सिर्फ 2% हमारी GDP एजुकेशन के लिए। मैं कहता हूँ कोठारी कमीशन ने 1966 में कहा कि 6% होना चाहिए। मैं कहता हूँ 6% दीजिए, कई देशों में, इसराइल में तो 12% दे रहे हैं एजुकेशन के लिए, और देखिए कितना चमक रहे हैं। इतना छोटा देश, सब घेरा हुआ देश, परंतु कोई उनको छू नहीं सकता। तो ये इस प्रकार से सोचनी चाहिए। उसके लिए सिर्फ लोगों को गुमराह करके आप राजनीति करो और फिर जातवाद लगा करके और पैसा बांट करके दोबारा जीतो, ये तो देश के साथ गद्दारी होगी।
Dr. Swami, I have one question.
Yes.
So if in the next 25 years, so we're looking at what we have learned for the past 75, in the next 25, currently what we see is the dependency on this bureaucracy way too much in governance. Don't you think that is one of the crucial elements that India needs to have to reduce their dependence on bureaucracy and focus on more entrepreneurship, innovation that you always talk about?
It's not the fault of the bureaucrats. If your ministers and prime ministers don't know the subject, they'll be victims of the bureaucrats. So there used to be a BBC show called Yes Minister.
Right.
You can see that to see how the bureaucrats are. The bureaucrats have no intention of taking any risk for you. And it's invariably, once you start depending on them, then they tie you around your finger. I can tell you one or two officers of the PMO today, they scare the hell out of ministers. Ministers get frightened by them. And so you have to have ministers who know their subject. There are examples even in this government. I think Gadkari is one example where he knows what his job is and everybody, and he's performing. So I think we need to emphasize that it's not enough that you got a caste backing and therefore you have to promote him or so on. You have to see and make it worthwhile or educate people. Narasimha Rao, by the way, was a highly educated person. That's why he was able to do it. He was able to, although he was educated in science, but he knew how to get work out of me. You see, and out of Manmohan Singh, so many of the other civil servants. So when the civil servant knows that the minister knows his subject, they will all behave and deliver. So no use blaming the civil servant.
But they do hold back because, given that what power they
wield. Why would they hold back if the minister knows this job? No, I have my brief experience as a minister. I never saw any official hold back anything. They may come and argue something you don't like, but you can overrule them. You tell them, put it down in the file and then I'll overrule you. I did it many often.
It's just that I don't blame them, and
their best brains go to these competitive exams because of the security of employment. And we should know how to use their brains. I don't blame the bureaucrats. I blame the lack of education of our politicians.
Okay. And one last, so touchy subject again. In the next 25 years, what do we see in terms of judicial reforms? Because there's been a lot of talk back and forth, but do you anticipate anything that needs to be done so that we can, expedite all the cases that are going back and forth and the duration that is taking? What can be done to help
them? No, all these cases are all piling up, not because of the judiciary, because you are not sanctioning in time. I think our Supreme Court should have double the number they have today. You don't know how many, you go to America, the whole year they will take only 200 cases. Here, every day they take 200 cases.
Every judge.
Yes, every judge.
Why is that, Doctor?
Because in India, the population is that size and the number of judges is small. In fact, even the present Supreme Court, there are at least 7-8 vacancies which the government is not filling up.
Okay.
So it's no use blaming the judiciary. Okay. I'll tell you, ultimately it comes down to getting good people at the political level and to encourage our country that yes, going to politics is a good thing. And that happens in America where you live. Yeah.
Jagdish. Dr. Swami, taking this question ahead, that what you said is people's indifference to politics. Do you think that in the coming 25 years, a climate will be created where good people will come to politics, good leadership evolve, and they will have a better grip on the country's policies?
The question is that people today who are at the high levels of politics, they don't want good people to come. Then what is the problem I have? I'm not saying good, but I insist on the rule of law and my politicians don't like it. So keep him out. Otherwise, if tomorrow I become finance minister, 90% of the corruption will go only because I know the subject, nothing more. So you must understand, for the next 2 decades, if you encourage people to come to politics, there are people coming to politics. They fail in the exams and then they come and then they do land deals, this deal, that deal, all kinds of deals. We want somebody who says thinking in terms of nation, and that you have to motivate the people. And once they come, it will be in America. It happened in the 1930s was and the 1920s was just like what we have in India today. Then so many intellectuals resigned their positions, joined politics. There was a great economist called Douglas. He was a professor at Chicago. He resigned and came. And we were all surprised. My teachers used to be very surprised that he did. But ultimately, it paid because he cleaned up. Adlai Stevenson was a great a lawyer, but he gave all that practice up and he came to politics and he made a difference. Once that happens, then the people also get enthused, you see. And as a consequence, things can be cleaned up. If American in 1920s could be cleaned up with all the bootlegging and this and the crime and so on.
Yeah, heavy crime.
I think India can also do the same thing.
I mean, coming to that last point, Dr. Swami, you mentioned about corruption. One of the points that in your tweet, which has gone viral, basically what Modi promised 5 years ago, so what is where are we today? One important point was bringing back black money.
Yes.
And it is not only that problem. So good.
It's so easy. The United Nations said, if you know of a country or a bank where your illegal money is being kept, just tell us. We will freeze that bank and give you all the money which has Indian names in the accounts. But, you know, we didn't do it. We could have done it. That time I was blocked by Mr. Jaitley, but I thought Mr. Jaitley was gone. We'll be back to going for there. But no, it's not so. Today, they are mind-boggling their, by details. What about Adani? I mean, I can give names. I see in the case of Ambani, I can say at least he's building some assets. What is Adani doing except taking assets, which is already built? I call him a trapeze artist, that's why.
Arvind, we have passed 9 o'clock.
Okay, Swami, I know, as I was telling you in the beginning, that this subject is so vast.
Yes,
we cannot do justice with this subject in maybe one episode. And sure, we'll have another opportunity to discuss other issues. You did pay some attention to the education, agriculture, and so on. What about social structure? I mean, Ramesh had pointed towards this. There were some questions from the viewers that are we going to live with this reservation system forever, which was only meant for 10 years? So in next 25 years, are we going to have any social reforms? And this is the last question.
No, you see, the word social reform means, are you meaning the caste system, or are you meaning the income inequalities, which also
income equality is terrific. We have produced 166 billionaires in India when there were none in 47. None in 47. And in last 10 years, the last 10 years, the growth has been the maximum. We had only 8 or 9 billionaires in 2000.
I am not against the billionaires being come, but they should come by honest means.
Yes.
If they come by crooked means, then they make others also corrupt.
Yes.
You can't be corrupt unless you make some other people corrupt. You can't go to a bank and loot them, as I gave you those numbers just now. 9.9 lakh crores have been lost in just 5 years.
Yes.
I think, you know, making money is not a bad thing, and becoming rich is not a bad thing, but to subvert the system, for that you need strong politicians who can take them to account, and that is when the people also don't vote on caste, don't take money. In Tamil Nadu, I think you can't get elected unless you give some money. They may not vote for you even after taking the money, but if you don't give money, they'll definitely not vote for you. They have all been spoiled completely and supposed to be the most educated state in India. So it's a cultural change that you are talking about, where all the queries I generally get in general public is, why aren't you a minister? I told him it's not necessary that what I'm doing, I need to be a minister. Do you think that a minister made Ram Mandir's thing cleared? Do you think what I have done in... there are so many things I've done without being a minister.
Okay. But you're more powerful than a minister.
Well, that's okay. Ministers do get afraid whenever I turn up to see them. But the fact is that society, individuals should be taught to become strong. And the only way you can become strong is if you are not complicit in any illegal activities. And that has to be made into a virtue. That is why the old system, I'm not asking, that system was never birth-based. Unfortunately, it got birth-based during the Islamic rule. But the fact is that a person who is knowledgeable but has no money, his weight is rated higher in society than a man with money. But the man with money is not discarded. He's also part of the society. But his prestige doesn't come as much as the man who has not have, doesn't have any money. Automatically, you know, it means that corruption will be reduced when money has no value. In that sense, social value.
So, thank you, Dr.
Swami. All the thing will take time, but right now, I would say we should concentrate on two things. Restore the economy, make it grow at 10% per year, at least for another 10 years, and it's possible. Everything is available. And two, tell the whole world that don't mess with me, and that only way can be done by defeating the Chinese and throwing them out of Ladakh and Arunachal.
So thank you, Dr. Swami, for being so forthright in your views. You have not only critically reviewed the 75 years, the progress which India has made and the strengths and weaknesses, but you also shown the path to the government of India for the next 25 years. And two key takeaways. One is the economy, and second is a strategy for defense. Thank you very much, Dr. Swami. And of course, as I said, there are many, many, many subjects, and we will take it up, assuring the viewers that we'll take up those issues maybe in other episodes of Words of Wisdom, Gyan Ganga. Thank you very much, Jagdish ji. Thank you, Ramesh Swami ji, and happy birthday once again to you. Thanks the technical team led by Ashish Shetty, Gadgi Rakesh, Ishwar Iyer, Swaminathan, Tejas Nawalkul, Vishal Mehta, and Ajesh Nair. We'll be meeting next Sunday once again with a new topic and Dr. Subramanian Swami, our mentor, to discuss those issues with you. Till then, Namaskar, Jai Hind.